It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go, off and running on this 8th day of August 2023. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between and the great globe round. And where if you pop in right now, you'll be greeted by the early arrival crew. That would be Theo and Squeaky and Anatole with me as your humble moderatrix. And I'm very not good at that. But nonetheless, here we are because Roger said he's going to be late to the party because he's still working on his son's patio roof. Roger, this is probably not great weather for that, my friend. This is inside canning stuff weather. I don't know how bad it is there in Oregon, but I imagine it's still pretty hot. Oh, hi, I'm Robin. And, well, if you happen to be a podcast listener to this program, which many of you are, I will offer the standard supplication at the beginning of the program and try to mention one in the midst of it, too. And that is to say, please, whatever podcast platform you take the program on, whether it be Apple Podcasts or Podbean or Spotify or TuneIn Radio, whatever, please like and subscribe to the program on those specific platforms because it increases the visibility of the program, especially when you stop and say hi to the algorithms there and leave a comment. And Brother Deacon Asa and I both appreciate it a lot. And I think, you know, yes. So if you would please do that, that would be great. Also tell your friends and neighbors because there's a conversation going on here the likes of which don't take place anywhere else. It's just that simple. So if you please, yes. So it's Titanic Tuesday on The Horn. We'll get to it in a second. But, every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude. And this program is no different. And so we say thank you to our 8th day of the month subscribers. And that means thank you ever so kindly to Marsha, and thank you to Sue for Earth. Thank you both for being partial sponsors of the program and helping to keep all of this on the air. And hey, if you should happen to be a new listener or even new-ish listener, new member of the community, new participant in this long-running two-decade conversation, thank you. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us. And by us, I don't mean me and that mouse in my pocket. I mean the entire community, the folks who write in, the folks who call in, the folks who sit and think about things as we discuss them. Thank you for being part of this community. So the fundraising goal, as it stands, is at $1,165. That's basically today, yesterday, Friday, and a portion of Thursday that remains unfunded. $265 of Thursday, all of Friday, all of Monday, and all of today is unfunded at this point. And there are bills a-coming. So any help is great help. If you'd like to, we'd love to have, Sue and Marcia would love to have some new subscribers on this here 8th day of the month. So maybe a new subscription would be a great way to, a great way to spend the value of less than half of a stick of Wrigley's chewing gum per hour of programming over the course of a month. That's what a $10 subscriber per month is putting out. That's what's gone. So the PayPal button is at headon.live. The Patreon button is there under contribute. The U.S. Postal Service is still an option via the mailing address, The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318 Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. And that address is also there on the contribute page at headon.live. Okay? Okay. So like I said, it's Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, and well, that's the day of the week that we take time out to acknowledge the Titanic intellect of the right wing, the Republicans, the Libertarians, the Maggots, the John Birchers, the Patriot Fronters, the various and sundry Nazis, because they're all Nazi very smart. And this, the day, of course, is named for a moment long, long ago in radio history now, when over in America's fifth smallest radio market, the Morning Monotone took a call from one of his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing fans who said, "Steve, how come it is that there ain't no rocks, that there is seashells in the rocks of West Virginia? I done seed them when I was down in the coal mines." To which the Morning Monotone replied, "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." And there was a lot more vibrancy in the way I say it. Nobody could monotone quite like him. He's in the great beyond now, probably monotoning right away at the eternal. But that's where it comes from. And no movement, there are no word on the whereabouts of the Titanic lobster claw crackers. Mm-hmm. So that being said, let's start in Florida. No, I'm wrong. Let's start with something that got started yesterday. And they may take on a life of its own. Kenda writes in, subject line, "The Great Miracle Whip Controversy." Oh, what have I done? Yeah, what have you done, Ken, in Northwest PA? "I was raised in the Missouri Ozarks," Kenda says, "by a Baptist-leaning, Democratic-believing, hard-working, rock-solid, middle-class family." I've seen some of Kenda's photos on social media, and that is exactly the vibe I get when I see her photos, and they're wonderful photos. "I was raised on Miracle Whip. I put Miracle Whip in tuna salad, potato salad, macaroni salad, egg salad, deviled eggs, coleslaw dressing, on BLTs, ham sandwiches, bologna sandwiches, anything that needs spread, whipped, creamed, stuffed, or sauced. Worst trauma as a kid, biting into mayo at a picnic or a potluck. I stand with Bernadette and all who believe in miracles." Oh, Kenda. It's great when we can start the program with a cowbell of that quality. So it does continue, and I heard from overnight, I heard from our pal Joy in Ann Arbor, who herself had something to share. I love Miracle Whip. Wow, did I fuck up yesterday? I love Miracle Whip. I use it at least once a day. I enjoy mayo too, but Miracle Whip is its own thing. My unpopular opinion contribution would be Spam. I love it. So do I. Joy goes for the lower sodium version of Spam, which I think is just a smart idea. Anyway, I love the jalapeno flavor. But we got a thing going yesterday, and it's proven to be absolutely delightful. So we will. I'm gonna watch my mouth about talking about Miracle Whip. But I'm not going to stop loving raisins. You can't make me. Lee in New York with an early question. Titanic Tuesday origin. Did the great monotone, Lee asks, study under Ben Stein? No, Lee. He was sui generis. He was his own brand of monotonous. Ben Stein was positively animated compared to him. We will not see his like again. My goodness gracious. At one point in time, the Beckley, West Virginia Police Department noted that the hours between 9 a.m. and 11 a.m. were absolutely the worst for traffic accidents in the greater metropolitan Beckley area. Cars would just veer off the road. Wham! Telephone pole. His powers were that mickle. Stop trying to make mickle happen, Gratch. So I've got this in the stack, and Kat with an update, Kat in Ohio. Challenge, it's going down in Ohio. Feel it in my bones. Went to my polling station. First time there was a line, had to wait. $50 vote no in Ohio challenge. And the turnout on this one single constitutional ballot issue has seen a higher turnout for early voting and by-mail voting than any previous non-presidential election. Governors, members of Congress, senators, no. And so voters in Ohio seem to understand the gravity of what's facing them. To go back and sort of explain the nature of the issue, Republicans in Ohio, to put it mildly, despise democracy. Presently, in the state of Ohio, if one puts a constitutional amendment on the ballot, there's a signature gathering process. There's a curing of bad signatures process. But once the measure is on the ballot, the constitutional amendment, passes with 50% plus one vote. That's democracy. That is a majority. But the maggots in Ohio, for a variety of reasons, and remember, this is the same Ohio whose Speaker of the House was involved in a massive blackmail and bribery scandal that has seen that individual who all he had to do, I don't know what it is about Republicans. All you had to do is follow the law. But he couldn't. All Trump had to do was not start an insurrection. But he couldn't. And so here we are. And in Ohio, the entirely corrupt Republican majority legislature just can't abide the idea of democracy taking the day. So they came up, and we did, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, or maybe it was exactly a week ago today. In consultation with some multimillionaire dark money groups and shadowy tax-exempt grifts, the Ohio Republicans came up with a wonderful dodge. Change the means of amending the Constitution of the state of Ohio such that any constitutional amendment has to have a 60% threshold. In other words, taking the state of Ohio and the voters of Ohio from democracy to minority rule. If 40% plus one vote of Ohioans under this scheme don't like a constitutional amendment, the minority takes the day. And the majority can go and pound sand. Now, hilariously, because Republicans can't tell the truth to save their souls, they'd rather climb a tree and lie than stand on the ground and tell the truth, they're saying, well, what we're doing here is we're protecting the state of Ohio from outside interests coming in to take away our guns and make all the women's have abortions and trans in the potties. And point of fact, however, that nasty vulgar billionaire from Illinois, who is the paterfamilias of the Uline Corporation, well, he has pumped millions upon millions of dollars into this campaign to try to make sure that Ohio completely enshrines in law the disgust, the absolute abject nausea that Republicans feel when they think about women. So, good gracious, the numbers for early voting are astonishing, really. Now, this was a week ago. And as of a week ago, over a half a million people had voted by mail or in person since early voting began on July 11th. As I said, that's an amazing number. It's nearly double the early voting tallies for the two previous midterm primary elections. And those elections included governor and Congress. Now, meanwhile, there's an AstroTurf bullshit group in Ohio called Protect Women Ohio. That's who Fox News Digital interviewed. At its core, it's about keeping out-of-state special interest groups from buying their way into our Constitution, which we're seeing happen all too far too often. Amy Natose is press creep for Protect Women Ohio. They're circumventing the legislative process and going directly after the Constitution. Yeah, nothing says majority rule like destroying majority rule, right there, Amy? On the other hand, the ACLU told the truth. The purpose of Issue 1 is to silence the majority of Ohioans and subject us to the policy preferences of a small group of extremists who have secured the favor of our unconstitutionally gerrymandered legislature. Just look at how issue one supporters are framing their argument. They deem their effort the Protect Ohio's Constitution campaign. In fairness, they are desperately attempting to protect our Constitution. The key question is, from whom are they protecting our Constitution? The answer is, a majority of Ohioans. Now, to be fair, I wish it wasn't quite so much of a mouthful, that response. They want this because they hate women. And Amy Notos, whatever, who cares? She's so full of internalized misogyny that it's a miracle she can get out of bed every day. Then there's a pettifogger and a political consultant there in the Buckeye State that named Mehek Cook. He said, "They're lying to Ohio voters when they say we're taking their vote away. We're actually empowering Ohioans. The Constitution is truly for the structure of government and the fundamental rights, not policies. I believe that's the place for the legislature. So I feel very strongly..." Oh, I'm sorry. Mehek is a woman. "So I feel very strongly as a mom. I will always mock all Republicans. But also a business owner and an attorney that we need to protect a strict analysis of our Constitution and not allow these outside groups to dictate what works in Ohio." But ma'am, what about the U-Line guy? "Oh, he's okay. He's on our side. His millions are ours." So we will find out, as Kat points out. We will find out if Ohioans actually give a damn about democracy. Now, the neat thing is, either one, yes or no, please let it be no, only needs 50% plus one to stop this 60% threshold from going through. So if 50% plus one of Ohioans say, not just no, but hell no, then it ends. On the other hand, if this thing passes, well, that's when it gets interesting. If this nightmare piece of bullshit passes, it goes into effect immediately. And that means that an abortion measure, a constitutional amendment on the ballot in Ohio in November that makes a woman's right to reproductive care a matter of constitutional law in the state of Ohio, well, that's going to require a 60% vote, and the minority, self-hating women and a whole bunch of Republican men, can make sure that they send people capable of pregnancy back to the dark ages of barefoot and pregnant and back alleys and coat hangers. And of course, the measure in November is written deliberately by the people who despise women to make it readable as basically anything the Republicans want. And in case anybody's out there in Ohio who isn't really on fire about the abortion issue, well, the maggots there want you to know that they're also coming for your freedom protectors. They're going to take away all your guns, which is complete bullshit. Hell, the state of Ohio has already taken away significant gun rights, unless it's changed in the years since I stopped paying attention to it. You probably don't care about this, and frankly, neither do I, but golly Moses, does this matter in the long run? Long about Thanksgiving week and the week thereafter, here in almost level West by Coal Manchinistan. Well, that's what we call book season. Oh, I was driving the back road home the other day and I saw a mama, a doe, standing in the field. Mama had had twins. Two of the most beautiful little fawns. And they were little. They were young because they were still in their pretty little fawn spots. And I slowed down and rolled down the window because the twins were too close to the road. And I said, "Children, get away from the road. Mother, get the babies away from the road." She looked at me and her tail went up and... And then, lo and behold, the children, little precious little fawns, "Mama," and went up to her, and they leaped into the woods. I felt like I had done my good deed that day. But anyway, come book season, rifle season, that's what's the important part, rifle season. Well, see, they lack freedom over there in the Buckeye State. So, starting about Thanksgiving week or the weekend before that, lots and lots and lots of pickup trucks with Ohio plates cross our river into West Virginia. Because over here, well, they're in Ohio, they ain't got no freedom. So that means they got to do all their deer slaughtering with a shotgun with a punkin ball. They can't use no 30-06 nor 30-30 nor 7mm. No, hell no, 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 no. No 308 caliber brush guns nor nothing. Just some damn stupid old shotgun, and you got to get way too close to Bambi before you can blow him the hell away. Here in West Virginia, you can sit on a ridgetop and shoot Bambi from a mile away with your 7mm mag. They never think about how much fun they're going to have dragging the deer back after. But then again, for a lot of them, they don't really care. It's about the killing. They're not filling their freezer. There aren't, you know, starving little Buckeye children at home waiting for daddy to bring home the venison. They just like to kill things. And they come over here and they bring the rifles that they can't use in Ohio. And they have a high old time, and they drink what a friend of mine once told me that up in Northeast PA where he learned to hunt. I had a buddy referred to a bottle of beer as a pork chop in a bottle. They drink a lot of pork chops in bottles. And then they leave them laying around and strap Bambi to the family truckster and head back across our river to Ohio. So their gun rights have already been taken away. They can't even use America's favorite freedom protector. They can't even use an AR-15 to hunt deer in Ohio. They can't. Just can't. Steve, you're a native Ohioan. How come y'all never finished your Capitol Dome there in Columbus? Run out of money, did you? Yeah, actually, that looks surprisingly like the United States Capitol before Abraham Lincoln said, "No, we're finishing the dome. This is a little embarrassing." That was during the Civil War. But, no, they're terribly... And by the way, protect women, Ohio. Protect them from... What, exactly? Protect them from being able to take care of an ectopic pregnancy? Protect them from being able to be medically treated for preeclampsia? Gestational diabetes? Yeah, that's some top-notch protecting going on there in Ohio. They're going to get our guns, though. And everybody in Ohio will be trans. It won't be safe to go to the potty. We'll be peeing in parking lots. So thanks for reminding me, Kat. And thanks for the $50 challenge. We can get down to $1,065 if somebody will match Kat's $50. And that would be very helpful. Because between now and 4 days from now, I gotta crank out 300, and then by the 16th, I gotta crank out 500 more. Fun. Steve does, I confess, the Ohio Constitution, I confess that under any other circumstances, I would be for changing the threshold to amend my home state's constitution, contrarian. However, I can see that this has nothing to do with changing that threshold inasmuch as it's about changing the threshold to foil the proposed abortion amendment this fall. This is about change in the rules in the middle of the game, first and foremost. My personal view is that I'm against properly amending the Constitution at all. I don't like referenda in general either. I understand that. But this thing was on the books, and I think the maggots in Ohio got a good look at the polling data and realized that they were going to... Well, there was some data to suggest that it might pass somewhere around 58%. And so they said, I know what, let's make it 60. 60% of Ohioans can't agree on nothing. And so here we are. Oh, and by the way, in case anybody's wondering, Protect Women Ohio has bought $25 million worth of ads in this campaign. I can only imagine what trying to watch TV is like, Kat. One of the ads shows President Biden saying, there's no such thing as someone else's child. And then says, they're coming for your parental rights! Oh, dear. So, as Lee in New York pointed out, this thing, the polls close at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, signed Lee, not in Ohio. Matt in San Francisco, Republicans, they just don't like democracy. However, they are either too stupid to realize that or just too evil. Either way, I would rather they just come out and say they don't believe in democracy. Oh, Matt, they have so much coming out to do. Oh, my goodness gracious. That's just way low on the list. At least we can start there and move the conversation forward, Matt continues. Okay, we both agree you don't believe in a democratic republic, but that's what we have, sport. So now what do you want to do? We really need to stop appeasing stupid fascists. There are plenty of places they can go to live out their ideals. Go on down to the Five and Dime and sell your bullshit there. Because I ain't buying that bullshit today. Hear, hear. There's only one way to beat fascists, and that is to utterly destroy them. If the Republican Party wants to be a party that has somewhat different ideas about how to run a democratic republic, that's fine. But as long as they're fascists, as long as they're running into court in Spokane to complain that they're being canceled and that infiltrating liberal done found out who we are and published our names and now we can't so much as get a job picking up trash. Well, you know, the wages of Nazism, I mean, because really, short of, say, you know, Matt Walsh's outfit or testicle-toasting Tucky O'Rose Carlson's outfit, I should have called it Little Benny Shapiro's outfit. He's the brains of the joint. Who really wants Nazis working for them? Yes, your challenge was met yesterday, Steve. Thank you. But there they were. I'm sorry, I just enjoyed that story immensely. I love the idea of Nazis pissing and moaning to a court that they would shut the fuck down if they got a half a chance. Oh, she's dropping the F-bombs already. Matt adds, indigenous name, Robin shall be known as Deer Whisperer. You know, it might be more like not so much whispering as Deer Hectorer. Deer Nag. Because I was upset at the little fawns. They've got so much to learn. And they're never going to learn it hanging out by the roadside that I know for a fact people zip up and down like it's the freaking NASCAR track at Bristol. Fair point, Lee in New York. Stop it, Robin. You said Republicans can't tell the truth to save their souls. Got any proof they have souls? None whatsoever. And Steve says, this fall, the real piss in the eye moment would be if this passed and the abortion amendment passed. It will be one of those things that members of the multimillionaire for-profit media will hand-wring and pearl-clutch over and declare that this may be a bellwether for 2024. Oh my God, could Ohio go for a Democratic presidential nominee? I mean, if this thing passes and the 60% threshold is there, and then in November they meet the 60% threshold to protect abortion, yeah, that might be a moment. Randy Radar says he's wary of eating venison. What about contracting deer wasting disease? Mad deer disease? Have you ever seen a mad deer? No, I get it. Chronic wasting disease is a crisis in the deer population. Oh, let's see. So, leaving Ohio, let's go down to Florida for a moment. I mean, this is a Titanic Tuesday. Couple of things about getting edumacated in Florida. And this comes from the, well, of course, it's Florida. Or forget it, Jake, it's Florida file. We talked last week about the fact that the education system in Florida is now legally empowered to use the noxious, stupid, unintelligent, crafted with ill intent videos from the Not a Real University PragerU in K-12 schools. Well, we just found out there's a new sort of video that's going to be A-okay to show to kids in classrooms. And the article comes, of all places, from Scientific American. PragerU, by the way, Florida is roasting right now. Marine life is dying because the ocean around Florida is approaching the temperatures of a poorly maintained hot tub. PragerU CEO Marissa Streit, oh, she must be a great human being, told Scientific American that the videos from PragerU are meant to counterbalance information students are currently being taught about climate change. Mm-hmm. Yes, climate change. Now, the education system in Florida, you'll recall, has already banned the teaching of African American history on an AP level. They've banned the teaching of advanced placement psychology. they have declared that slavery provided beneficial skills to the people who were enslaved. Is anybody going to be surprised by what I'm about to say? Well, Marissa Streit, whom I would not trust with the carcass of a run-over skunk. Young kids are being taught climate hysteria. They're hearing that the world is coming to an end, and we think that there needs to be a healthy balance. You know what Marissa Streit should have done to make that announcement instead of giving an interview to Scientific American? She should have stood in the 112-degree heat index heat of the Florida panhandle outside, no hat, no nothing, and said it. Yes. Now, the videos are entirely and utterly and completely bullshit. Not a word of truth in them, and they rely on a fictional character, a teenager named Anya. Anya? Anya? Hansel? Hansel? Anya. Anya is worried about climate change. And the narrators explain to Anya, you know, because she's just a girl, you know, girls get hysterical. And the narrators at PragerU explain to her that the climate has always cooled and warmed long before carbon emissions were a factor. I mean, I guess that's technically true. But the Earth hasn't been generally this hot since long before there were human beings to try to live on it. And, of course, there's the fact that the current crisis is precipitated by our emission of carbon into the atmosphere. But that's Anya there and her hysteria over climate change and having to be calmed by some kindly and loving daddies from PragerU. That's the tip of the melting iceberg. Because also in those videos are attacks on wind and solar energy. Wind and solar energy are said to be harmful to the environment. Yeah, but burning coal isn't. Right? Yeah. What's a little asthma, kid? Take a deep breath. Oh, wait, you can't. And then, because it's catnip for maggots, the PragerU fascists go on to say that climate activists are just like Nazis. And they bring on a Holocaust survivor who says that, Anya being criticized by her teacher and classmates for telling lies when she spews forth the propaganda from PragerU, well, that's just like the Holocaust survivor struggling to remain alive during the Third Reich. This is fascism. Okay, this is what fascism does. Nobody is under the impression that PragerU is an educational institution. Nobody's under the impression that PragerU is a U. It's a grift. And Florida has dipped into the till to, well, enhance Dennis Prager's bottom line. And then, well, we're still in Florida. And this actually ties in with a little bit of happy news on my part. In a sort of backhanded way. And I've gone back and forth over whether to share this, but I share a lot here. This is a moment of extreme joy for me. I've mentioned some court proceedings I've been involved in lately. And frankly, what it was my name change. My given name was R-O-B-I-N. It is now legally, permanently, R-O-B-Y-N. Slightly more feminine spelling. And today, I got all dolled up and went and got my new driver's license. Now, I won't see the hard copy for, according to the state of West Virginia, 10 to 14 days. But that's one of those little moments of triumph. I am she and she is me. And it just feels so exquisitely good. And so I got a paper temporary copy. And I've been looking at it all day long ever since I got it. The photograph is wonderful. Once again, I looked at the guy at the DMV, and the DMV was absolutely empty. I felt like I had been absolutely kissed on the end of my little pink tomato nose by the goddess of irony. I walked in, and the DMV was a ghost town. The workers were like, "Oh, we've got a customer. Yay!" And it was no big deal. But I will have a new license with my proper name on it. And so now, like on my Facebook page where it says R-O-B-Y-N Kincaid, that is who I well and truly am. Now, why do I mention this? Wait a minute. Steve in New York with a question or a comment. That Stripe lady in Florida, she should have stood out bundled up and shivering in the dead of winter in 102 degree Chile. I like that too. And Anya, Steve says, sounds kind of like Anya comes from the same place as Greta, as in Thunberg. Well, maybe, maybe not, because, well, Flavio is our practitioner of the art of more than one language word knowing. Anya, providing the Cyrillic spelling, is a Russian diminutive of Anna. Mm-hmm. That was my thinking, too. Is there something PragerU would like to tell us? Subject line, DMV, Matt in San Francisco says, if you're submitting the DMV to the unpopular things you love, then you win, lady. Yay, me. But there's a reason that I mention that. My little moment of happiness today. I was so cute. I had a black linen short suit. Black linen shorts and a black linen double-breasted jacket over a white bodysuit with my pretty little butterfly necklace, hair and makeup to perfection. And it was just wonderful. And so the reason I mention this, we all know how much I love the Bard. How much I love the works of Shakespeare. And some of my sweetest memories. And it's kind of surprising to think about that this was all happening in a public high school in Alabama in the late 1970s and early 80s. Let's see. In ninth grade, we studied Romeo and Juliet, because who better to study Romeo and Juliet than a bunch of school kids, high school kids, who are basically the same age as Romeo and Juliet. It was a cautionary tale. Now listen, y'all, don't go running off and getting married to the child of your mama and daddy's most hated enemy. Don't do it. It's a bad thing. Look, and we watched the 1968 Franco Zeffirelli film because the Baz Luhrmann film had not yet even been dreamt up. I love the Baz Luhrmann version, by the way. That great big whopping 45 caliber semi-automatic pistol that's called a sword. Bite your thumb at me, sir. I do bite my thumb. And in 11th grade, I think we read and viewed a film version of Taming of the Shrew. Something makes me think it was done by a repertory company out of San Francisco, maybe. I don't know. It was great. One of Shakespeare's more misogynistic plays. But because of that introduction, I fell in love with the Bard. And I was intrigued to continue studying it in college. And I took my obligatory, required to graduate Shakespeare class. Loved it. Acted in a Shakespeare play in my master's degree program. Adored that. I knew right then and there that if I stayed in that master's degree program, my MFA in acting would be some sort of Shakespeare play. Not Hamlet. No. It's a bit overdone. But it all begins with education. It all begins in something as simple as a little high school in Alabama. Well, in at least one county in Florida, students will not have that experience. Hillsborough County, Florida. Under the Don't Say Gay law, and the, which is technically known as the Parental Rights in Education Act, well, they wanted to stop teachers talking about gender identity or sexual orientation, i.e., erase the little gay and trans kids. It started out between kindergarten and third grade, and everybody was like, well, it's just kindergarten and third grade. What the hell do they need to know that shit for? And then they expanded it all the way to 12th grade and graduation. So here we are in Hillsborough County. No high school students there will be required to read a single solitary play by the one man who had more influence on the development of the English language than any other person. A man who made wordplay cleverness synonymous with English. So, instead, in Hillsborough County, Florida, students will be given anodyne passages from Shakespeare to ponder. Yeah, but none of it can touch on gender or sexuality. Or having a crush, or you know, a 14-year-old boy having a crush on a 14-year-old girl. And God knows there will be none of that deny thy name bullshit. Because that's woke! Clearly, Juliet is trying to get Romeo to leave his family in favor of her. That violates the family values of the state of Florida. If a kid reading these tiny snippets, like, what ho? No, we can't say what ho in Florida either because, well, that might make children think about sex trafficking or sex work. Sex work is honorable work. No, if they want to read the whole play, they're going to have to go somewhere else. And then they'll have to get their friends together because part of the fun back in 9th and 11th grades was reading it aloud in the classroom. Or performing snippets on stage. By the way, this is all the Bard is being erased from Florida under what Florida Orwellianly calls benchmarks for excellent student thinking. Best. Sic semper fascisti. Actually, sic semper fascismo. But I got to thinking when I, and this is where the tie-in is. I got to thinking about all the things in Shakespeare that Florida high school students can't learn now, at least in Hillsborough County, and this will, of course, spread, you know, like poison ivy. And I thought particularly because, like I said, last weekend I watched and had my happy little cry over Shakespeare in Love. Some of the bloom is off the rose. That's Shakespeare, by the way. Some of the bloom is off the rose with regard to Shakespeare in Love because of Harvey Weinstein's involvement and what Gwyneth Paltrow went on to say that he did to her. So, Shakespeare in Love is one of those odd movies that I have to watch with, you know, sort of compartmentalized in my mind because, well, Gwyneth Paltrow is just, oh, Gwyneth. But she's rich. I mean, I guess there's a big dollar in vagina-scented candles. Jade eggs to stick up your hoo-hoo. But I got to thinking about, no spoilers. I mean, it's how old is this movie? But it's ostensibly about the creation of Romeo and Juliet. But in the end, Queen Elizabeth commands Shakespeare to write something lighter this time for Twelfth Night. You know, one of the nights of the celebration of Christmas. And the 12 days of Christmas, all of that, yeah. And in Twelfth Night, there is a character. There's a shipwreck, of course. Shipwrecks were terribly convenient devices for setting up plots with mistaken identities and revelations of relationships and the like. And just to digress for a moment, as I chose my new identity, I got to thinking, you know, I didn't just want some anodyne woman's name. I wanted it to mean something. And my father, to the day he died, went on and on and on about how much he loved his grandmother. And said to me when I was little that had they had a girl, my mother and he, they would have named her Viola. For that was my great-grandmother's name, Viola. Called her Loney. But her name was Viola. and it seemed more than fitting and appropriate that I take that name. Though they'd be long gone, giving them the daughter and the name that he always said he would have chosen. Now, my great-grandmother was born in Brown County, Kentucky, sometime in the 1860s or 1870s. I don't know how much Shakespeare reading was going on in the frontier of Round County, Kentucky. And, of course, around here they pronounce it Viola. The same way those toxic little weenies in a can are called Vienna. It's Viola. And so I took that name for my own. But also for another reason. In the aforementioned Twelfth Night, which I promise you children in Hillsborough County, Florida, are not going to read. Well, a young woman is at sea and there's a shipwreck. And she survives. Here's the kicker. And this is why they will never read this again in Hillsborough County, Florida. In order to survive, I told you, you know, Shakespeare's comedies are all full of mistaken identities. They're mistaken identities or intentional identities are quite illegal in Florida now. In Florida now, one has to get permission, I kid you not, to call another student by their nickname. I told you years ago I said this. This was so much for the trips and the trays and the bubbas. No, this is going to become like some sort of grim fucking Russian novel where everyone is addressed by their entire full name. Now, see here, Antonin Mikhailovich Dipshitsky. Yeah. So, no nicknames. No honeys, no sugars. No sis, no sister. Don't ever say sis in Florida. You'd have to spell it out first. This is how stupid fascism can be. But there will be no reading of Twelfth Night because sweet Viola, surviving the shipwreck in order to survive, heaven forfend, has to pretend to be a man and dress as a man and act as a man, sound like a man, be a man. All the time with her feminine heart breaking for who she's falling in love with. For she's actually falling in love with a guy, Duke Orsino. You can see where this would absolutely drive little go-go boots Ron Monkey up to Clantis right up a tree. And now, by the way, in Orange County, the school district there, any contractors to the school system there or transgender teachers, well, they can't tell the students to call, let's say you've got a trans guy, Mr. Smith. He can't tell them that he is Mr. Smith. According to Florida and the Orange County School District, it doesn't matter if Mr. Smith has a beard down to his belly button you could strain lunch out of. You gotta call him Ms. Smith. Her, Ms. Smith. The point being, of course, to drive Mr. Smith out of Orange County and preferably out of Florida. And a lot of people, whether they be trans or the other parts of the LGBTQ community, are more than happy to oblige. And all of a sudden, Florida can't staff its fucking schools. So let's see. There will also be no Tempest in Hillsborough County, Florida, because that involves a fairy named Ariel, who is not particularly gender solid, and another mythical creature named Caliban. It's just a sad, sad creature. My dreams are full of sounds and sweet airs, so that when I wake, I sometimes cry that I might hear them again. The island is full of sounds and sweet airs. Yeah, there's a lot of gender confusion in there, so, you know, Shakespeare is bad for America and bad for Florida. And that motherfucker wants to be president of the United States. Might be interesting to do a historical deep dive and find out how the Nazis handled issues of gender and mistaken identity in Shakespeare. Oh, and by the way, there's also there's a character in Twelfth Night named Malvolio, and he is connived into believing that he should wear his garters crossed. He should wear his garters crossed. Well, no God-fearing child student in Hillsborough County, Florida, is going to hear about guys wearing garters! Never mind the fact that they were quite the rage back then. It's so, I told you this was going to be a Titanic Tuesday. It's so titanically stupid. And you might as well, because of the Don't Say Gay law and its expansion, might as well ban Shakespeare, might as well ban everything else. Because as we found out, one parent, one stupid right-wing maggot, Moms for Liberty, sit, Liberty, sit, woo! Parent can trash an entire curriculum with a single objection. I love all of our Horn Family Community congregation members in Florida. And my heart goes out to you. It must absolutely be heartbreaking to watch something like this happening to a place you love. You ride out the hurricanes. You put up with the heat. Now this. Well, it won't take very long. For a full-on collapse to begin in schools in Florida. And by the way, the disease is spreading at my beloved Harvard on the Mon up in Morgantown, West Virginia. I think the Board of Governors there has wiped out something like over 100 undergraduate and graduate degree programs, so yay. But not only am I Robin. Viola. And it makes me very, very happy. A Lee in New York says, no nicknames? Your full name is supposed to only be used when your parents want you to know that you're in big trouble. Well, I think children in Florida are in a persistent state of big trouble right now, Lee. Not of their own doing. Lee adds, banning the bard? I guess these will have to be banned too. Star Trek, The Conscience of the King, Doctor Who, The Shakespeare Code, and many, 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 many more. Some of the movies too, Lee. There's our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. Christopher in Oregon. Happy hoo-ha huevos. Is Gwyneth still grifting away? I saw an article about her showing us the inside of her refrigerator. Seeing the inside of anywhere else was beyond a paywall. See you on the slopes, Gwyneth. Not if she sees you first. Happy Titanic Tuesday, Robin. And the Horn family, Christopher. Thanks, Christopher. See you on the slopes. That was quality. I did not know that, Lee. Lee asking, did you know today is International Cat Day? Well, how sweet. I wish we had some international cats. Ours are simply of the domestic variety. I ran across a story last week that I thought was absolutely charming. Researchers have figured out that the domestic household kitty cat is a descendant of the African wildcat. And when they're in the wild, they don't look much different. Slightly longer legs. But they don't look that different from the kitty cat that's busily knocking crap off of your counter while you're not watching. And then it turns out that, you know who's responsible for spreading them? Probably more responsible than anyone else in, say, the Middle Ages for spreading cat culture around? Vikings! Vikings! Yeah, sure, you betcha we got some kitty cats. They kept them aboard their longships to keep the rats down, and just because on a long Viking voyage it's nice to have something sitting on your Viking lap, and because you can't stay in a state of perpetual pissed offness. You know, you've just raided Lindisfarne Abbey and stolen everything that wasn't nailed down. Well, when you get back on the boat, you need a therapy kitty to take all that raping and pillaging out of your system and get your emotions back under check. Huh? Thanks, Lee. And just because it was always an interesting thing, I remember when we first started this program to find out that you couldn't pump your own gas in Oregon. Well, it's a great day of freedom there. After 72 years, a new law has gone into effect that lifts a ban on self-serve gas stations. August 4th, Governor Tina Kotek signed a law that would let people pump their own damn gas. Me, I kind of like the idea of sitting in the car and getting the gas pumped. That's a guy who has a job. But, you know, there will still be a choice, at least until various retailers say, well, I don't need them anymore. Everybody can pump their own damn gas. Freedom! I don't know where I would have to go around here to find someone who would pump a lady's gas for her. But, you know, Christopher, Theo, other members of the Horn Family Community Congregation there in Oregon. Are you feeling just ever so much more free now? Oh, what? Emilio says, leave Gwyneth alone! We're lucky she even sells overpriced, highly dubious pseudoscientific nonsense to give us a false sense of health and to provide false hope for our genitals' dwindling vitality for us, you bastards. Well, that was a mouthful. There's serious news out there, but I've been getting some complaints about, can we please talk about something besides, you know, him? And I understand that, and we'll probably get into some of that at some point. But this is a victory. How long it remains a victory remains to be seen. You know, the Supreme Court of the United States, our most puissant dread sovereign, Supreme Catholic Majesties, are nominally not in session, but they're still working. And not too terribly long back, the Biden administration put in place a federal regulation whose goal was to do something about a genuine problem, namely ghost guns. The Biden administration, they're coming for your ghost guns! What do you need a ghost gun for? You can buy a ghost gun kit online. You can buy it at a store without a background check. And they become a working freedom protector pretty damn quick. And then you can be a lawful gun owner and go out and do what far too many lawful gun owners do and end the universe for people you don't even know. So what this regulation did over at the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives was to state unequivocally that ghost guns are firearms under a pre-existing statute called the Gun Control Act. And it expands the definition of a firearm to include parts and kits that can quickly become a gun. And it says that your ghost gun kit needs to have a serial number. And people, the companies that make them and sell them, need licenses so to do. And that sellers of ghost gun kits have to run a background check, just like anybody buying a retail firearm anywhere else. I mean, except a gun show. Or from your next door neighbor. Or from some guy who's in a financial crisis and for whom his collection of firearms is more liquid than having a stash of gold. In 2021 alone, law enforcement in criminal investigations recovered about 20,000 ghost guns. And that was up by a factor of 10. From 5 years previous. Well, naturally, when the regulation came out, some mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing, picking their teeth with their toenail clippings gun humper group ran to the court in where? Of course, Fort Worth, Texas. And went a-crying and a-pissing and a-moaning and a-bleating and a-braying and a-carrying on to a reliably maggot, shit-eating federal judge by the name of Reed O'Connor. We've dealt with old Reed before. And Reed said, I'm your boy. Nope. I'm going to enter an injunction against that law meant to save countless lives. Well, lo and behold, today, in Washington, D.C., our most puissant Supreme Catholic Majesties, or at least a couple of them, decided to overturn Reed O'Connor's injunction. I know. Amazing. Mirabile dictu. And they said that the regulation could stand for the time being. Old Balls and Strikes John Roberts and the Handmaid, joined with the three sane people on the court, namely Sonia Sotomayor, Elena Kagan, and Ketanji Brown Jackson. And said, yeah, we're going to overturn Reed O'Connor there. Naturally, though, the usual suspect said, hey, wait a minute. Ghost guns are more important than any damn fourth grader in America. That would be Clarence Pubes on the Coke can, Fappy Thomas, Sammy Bad Breath Alito, Ann's boy Neil Gorsuch, and Brat Kavanaugh, who likes beer and apparently ghost guns. So who knows? This may save a life or two until they get around to overturning it. And meanwhile, as far as what the American people think, 70% of the American people would like for ghost guns to have serial numbers and for only licensed manufacturers to produce them. Of that polling data by Reuters and Ipsos, 80% of Democrats said, yup, and 61% of Republicans went, oh, me too, I think I'm probably going to cry. So we take our little victories where we find them. Who were the plaintiffs? Well, it was a bunch of gun-humping gun owners. And then there was the Firearms Policy Coalition and Second Amendment Foundation. They're the ones who sued in federal court in Texas. And they said, this here is a threat to the long history of legal private gunsmithing in the new 90 states of America. Yeah, because in the history and traditions of the United States, legal private gunsmiths had 3D printers that they used. Oh, Jesus Christ. Now, Reed O'Connor said that Well, this here don't support covered weapons parts or aggregations of weapons parts, regardless of whether the parts may be readily assembled into something that may fire a projectile. Yeah, because I'm sure some of them are meant to fire those little flags that go bang. And the judge also didn't take any, didn't give much, he gave short shrift to the argument the Biden administration made that, if you just make these things where anybody can get them, the next thing you know, felons and minors and people who shouldn't be getting guns, at least under the law as it now stands, will be getting guns. So Reed O'Connor, not giving a good goddamn about, say, the slaughtered children of Uvalde, said, killed by a lawful gun owner, let's always remember that. Even if it is true that such interpretation creates loopholes that as a policy matter should be avoided, it is not the role of the judiciary to correct them or to go to the funerals. I added that last part. So here's the polling question. Let's see what the informal respondents to it said. Ah, support the ghost gun ban. 56%, 36% opposed, 6% aren't sure, and 2% want to get to the next screen. And so, down Georgia way, it's going to be a bit of a traffic snarl for a while in downtown Atlanta. Roads around the Fulton County Courthouse have been closed to traffic. Pryor Street Southwest between MLK Jr. Drive and Mitchell Street are closed to general traffic. It started 5 o'clock yesterday morning. They're going to be closed through August the 18th. That gives us, like I said, a little clue as to when Fonnie Willis may get up to something. The closed portion of the street will be converted to media parking, which will be on a first-come, first-served basis. Courthouse will remain open to the public, but you'll have to walk there from a long way off. Fonnie Willis. Well, I hope she's as badass as I think she is. And one last one, and then we'll go to the phones. By the way, Kat very kindly put a $50 challenge on the table in honor of what we all hope will be a resounding victory for freedom and democracy in Ohio this evening. And we are thus far at a goose egg. I understand, times are hard. But we do have to keep all of this going if we like to keep the conversation going. One last thing. You know, I mentioned on the program yesterday that the United States Women's National Football Team, you call it soccer, lost in the opening round of 16 to Sweden on a series of free kicks. And the Maggots, the same people who were having an absolute conniption over Jason Aldean and try this little small town. More on that in a minute. Well, they're absolutely thrilled that the U.S. women's national team lost to Sweden. The one well-known Maggot jackass, Benny Johnson, said, "Breaking, woke U.S. women's soccer humiliation. After winning back-to-back World Cups, the heavily favored Team USA has been eliminated by Sweden in the 16th round. Team USA's downfall was delivered by anti-America, anti-woman activist Megan Rapinoe's embarrassing free kick." Ah, Benny, you dipshit. Megan is a woman. Yeah. Benny doesn't know much about soccer anyway. Sorry for the misgender. Said they lost in the... Wait a minute. Because this is good. 16th round. There aren't 16 rounds in the World Cup. They lost in the field of 16, the opening round of the knockout rounds. And she didn't miss a free kick. She missed a penalty kick earlier in the game. And, of course, I've tried to resist mentioning him, but Nitwit Nero, a little ray of fucking orange sunshine that he is.
"Many of our players were openly hostile to America. No other country behaved in such a manner, or even close. Woke equals failure. Nice shot, Megan. The USA is going to hell, MAGA."
There is a day coming I am going to be so glad to note
USA is going to hell.
Why would you want to be pregnant? Never mind. And then there's, remember Alexi Lalas? He was the long ginger-haired dude on the U.S. men's team who never did anything near as successful as the U.S. women's team. He's a paid commentator over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. He said, "This USWNT is polarizing. Politics, causes, stances, and behavior have made this team unlikable to a portion of America." What portion is that? Why, yes, Alexi, that's the portion of America that, well, walks on their mouths, breathes through their knuckles, and picks their teeth with their toenail clippings. But who's counting? So there's your Make America Great Again. Can't be bothered to root for the women's national team on a world stage. And by the way, the USWNT, they were snake bit. They lost starters before the first game. They were playing hurt. And that final kick. Yeah. I watched it several times trying to figure out how that was actually a goal, but, you know, that's just me being bitter. Thank you. Thank you, Ralphs, jumping in on Cat's Challenge. We got $40 to go on that now. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you so much. And let's run over to the stress line and find out who we've got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, who do you think it is, Robin?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't got no mind reading thing.
Well, it's Tuesday, which is prayer meeting Eve. So
true. Hey,
chances
Dave.
Are, hi. We'll put the standard warning out just in case.
All right. Let's take it easy. Nothing. Let's take it easy on dinner, please. I haven't eaten yet.
I'm just saying, I'm putting the standard warning out just in case. It's only a mealtime watch, not a warning. Okay.
Okay, that's the cute. That's just light. Yeah. It's a watch, not a warning.
Speaking of warnings and watches and climate change and that state that looks like it needs a lot of Viagra. I now know why it's looking so limp. Its bathwater's too hot. Its bathwater's too hot.
I can buy that.
It might need some of them cooling boxer shorts. You know, I don't know how you get a state size pair of boxers, but.
Yeah, with the little little ice pouch. I mean, yeah, okay.
Right. Maybe it's a citizen count will stay up then instead of people fleeing the goddamn dictatorship. And if drag queens are to be made illegal in Florida, might I suggest that somebody place Governor DeSantis in shackles? Because those go-go boots are just the shit, aren't they? I mean, nothing says masculinity like go-go boots.
Well, you know, I was thinking earlier, but I was trying not to go after dinner in any of the time zones, but Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis, go-go boots, boxer shorts. What's not to hate?
Well, that would explain his campaign ad. Wouldn't it?
How so?
I mean, you know, the infamous campaign ad.
There's more than one. Queer.
Well, it's the one with all the, looks like it's a gay pride night at the governor's mansion.
With the 138 beats per minute disco music and the beefcake guys. And
oh, yes, and the flashing lights and the, you know, the biker's caps and, yeah, all that. But that would explain, and people have been reading into this, you know, is Ron DeSantis closeted? I'm coming down on the yes side of that argument.
Well, you know, Dave, we have an expert on that. You know, we can always ask the Horned Den Mother to fire up the gaydar and just, you know, tell us.
Well, that's true. We can. Although, you know, we do have an advanced gaydar system. So, yeah, that might work. I mean, after all, we've got Donald Trump flashing on that one. Of course, there's Lady G. Why not make it a trifecta, you know? I honestly think that this is nuts. I'm listening to everything that's going on back and forth and how the maggots are going crazy about, oh, they're trying to restrict his free speech. No. He can say anything he wants. He just can't commit a crime by saying it. Encouraging people to do violence and publishing private information without authorization and trying to intimidate people, which is what he loves to do best. I am hoping that the judge in D.C. looks over at him and says, Mr. Trump, this is your one and only warning. I'm setting the guidelines up so that even you can follow them. And then when he violates it, which he will, the federal marshals pay a visit to the Secret Service and make arrangements to have him escorted to Washington, D.C., where he can have another conversation with the judge after he gets his federally issued toothbrush, hygiene kit, and roll of toilet paper. Because, you know, as sure as I do, if he decides he wants to play games, the judge can play games. The best game I've heard that she can pull is she can make sure that trial starts at its earliest possible point. Yeah, every time they ask for more time, we need to... The only reason they need more time to read through it is they need to teach their lawyers how to read, Robin. Literacy is not a necessity to be on the Trump legal team.
No.
I mean, you've got counsel for the parking garage, and I believe she was part of the... Norton Cramden Havla law firm?
Yes.
And they're representing domestic abuse cases on the moon. But I did see something funny to lighten things up. I saw an ad for a law firm in the United Federation of Planets.
Yeah.
There was an Andorian attorney. She's in the full screen, leaving a number for them to contact her law office for any woman claiming, that James Tiberius Kirk, one captain of the United Federation of Planets, Starfleet, that Starfleet and Captain James Tiberius Kirk are being sued for back child support and abandonment. So I think that could become a problem for certain gallivanting captains. But let's see, we've covered the obligatory Star Trek reference. I put out the standard warning.
Yes.
Yeah, I think I pretty much covered most of everything. And I didn't ruin anybody's dinner.
I'm so proud of you. Look at the progress you're making.
I am.
By the way, Scary Jerry has awarded you a cowbell for habada. Savage Dave is bringing the levity and the light tonight.
Well, I mean, it can't be all gloom doom politics, can it, Robin?
It gets a little tiresome sometimes.
I know. Where's the classic food porn? I have nothing to offer.
Todd and I food porn the other night.
Yes, I heard, and I was so glad to hear it. But Todd's an expert, is a food porn expert. I mean,
that bagel thing he described was just like, what?
Oh my God. Now, it is quickly approaching my chili season.
Oh, please don't drag me into autumn yet. You're gonna throw Darlene and me both into a terrible, terrible funk.
Now, okay, Darlene, I mean this with all the love in my heart. This is something you can make year-round, but it's really good when the time of year starts turning to that dread season.
Yes, to get Shakespearean, that time of year thou mayst in me behold, when I begin to curse and shiver from the cold.
Oh, well, you know, there is another...
Oh, come on, a Shakespearean couplet? Please. Make a girl beg. Jeez.
Well, let me put it to you this way, Robin. There is one play of Shakespeare's that we have not mentioned this evening that would have a direct effect in Florida. No more Othello.
Oh, no, Othello is way too woke. Othello dies in the end, so that will be Monkey Up will love that. You know, wait, the black guy dies?
No, but his wife, and the fact that he's Moroccan, please.
He's a Moor, but he's from Venice.
But he's in Venice, yes. And he's married to the lovely Desdemona. And so Monkey Up is going to have issues. Oh, by the way, there is a plant down there in Florida and Texas and in that area of the universe called a monkey puzzle tree. And when I was a kid, we used to see these all over. The branches kind of crisscross everywhere, and they have beautiful leaves. I mean, they're just great. I'd say we plant 42 of them, one for every year of that idiot's life. and then tell him he can be president when he can figure out his way to get from one end of the tree road to the other without crossing another branch. He's got to go in a straight line because he's a Republican. He can only go in a straight line. No curves, no deviations, nothing like that. You can't have anybody questioning you. And so he and what few maggots he brings along, then you'll have my beloved former Governor Mike Pence.
Oh, isn't he awful?
And see, the thing is, here's the secret, Robin. He wants everybody to think he's this big evangelical, that he's always been an evangelical conservative.
Not so?
Well, you know, he's a backslid Catholic. Boy was raised Catholic.
I had no idea.
And I think the goddess of irony is so funny because when he was governor, right before when he was running on the Trump train.
So within the language and belief system of evangelicalism, when did Mike convert to Christianity?
Shortly after his adulthood, when he heard the voice of the sainted Ronnie Reagan.
Ronnie wasn't Catholic.
I know.
Stop that.
I know. But obviously, being an anti-abortion advocate like Mikey is, because he's a good Catholic boy.
Oh, he wanted to be super duper double plus secret probation anti-abortion, so he became a Catholic.
Oh yes. So in order to get his creds upright and blistering, he had to, you know, roll on the floor and anoint with Crisco and all that. So, I liked it better as a kid when I would go to a Methodist church and we'd make jokes about Baptists. But then I'd meet with my Baptist friends and they're like, you're going to a Methodist church and you're going to hell. You know, so, oh well. I grew up as a Catholic until I was 12. Here's the irony, Robin. Now, knowing this about Mikey, there was an archbishop named Joseph Tobin here in Indianapolis who had approved through one of the various charities the church runs a Syrian family to come to the United States. They'd already been vetted. They'd waited 2 years. They'd gone through all the paperwork. Mike Pence tried to stick his nose in it and withdraw all state funding from this charity that has done work for years. Well, Archbishop Tobin, later Cardinal Tobin, looked over Mike and said, I'm ordering the Archdiocese to provide all funding necessary. And here's the irony. Mike Pence said that Tobin should pray on it and figure out what God wanted him to do. And this is a guy who'd already been raised up until adulthood as a Catholic, so he knew what the Catholic teachings were on such issues. But he doesn't want people to know that he was ever Catholic. That's the irony. Mike Pence is a hypocrite. Mike Pence should probably go to prison.
How old did you say Pencil Neck Geek is?
I'm not sure. I think he's about 70. His older brother, Greg, is in the Congress, in the Indiana delegation.
Oh, by the way, Arnold in PA said, I love Dave, but winter is not coming. Oh, Arnold, it is. When I start hearing the crickets and cicadas outside at night, I know I'm screwed. But the autumn colors are so beautiful. I can hear Darlene yelling now, bullshit from here.
Now, I do have a great chili recipe. You can get the ingredients any time of the year. But I use 2 big cans of red gold tomatoes.
Nice choice.
You can use contadina, but the red gold.
I'm a big fan of red gold that come from Indiana, and I know it's probably some godforsaken maggot family out there farming tomatoes, but I've said before, I get really worked up about their not from concentrate tomato juice. Holy cow!
They do have a good product.
I mean, nobody else drinks it here. So I'll shake the can real good and just open it up and drink from the can till it's gone. Why bother? Why make it so I got to wash a glass?
Right.
Unless I want to doctor it up and make it something special, which I do from time to time. The red gold tomato juice, Campbell's consomme.
Right.
Little horseradish.
Well, what?
Little Worcestershire.
Now you are gonna. I haven't seen any tomato paste from Red Gold. I'm sure they make it.
Oh no, I still buy that Italian tomato paste in the toothpaste.
The contadina?
Too. No, it's not contadina.
The contadina.
This is actually I go to Kroger's and I get the private selection organic, and I can just squeeze it out of the tube and eat it off of a toothbrush. I mean, it's just.
Well, I use a little bit of contadina in my iron. But if you got some marinara sauce.
Well, see, that's why I was imploring you not to ruin dinner, because I got a snack coming after the program, and it's going to be something I don't get very often. Annette kindly, lovingly acceded to my request to please could we put some of those Totino's pepperoni pizza rolls in the air fryer and have them with Newman's Own marinara sauce.
So tonight's your cheat night.
Pretty much. I mean,
you get to step out on your diet.
I am going to be very plebeian while we're watching more episodes of The Lincoln Lawyer. Unpaid product placement.
I've been watching that. Oh my God, that's a good series.
It's very good.
That's a good series. I mean, he's an asshole in the best way, but he always seems to fall for the bad guy. You notice this? Last season, he was bound and determined that
I am in season one.
Oh, you are. All right.
We just started. Now, the other thing, though, and Annette and I and Tracy and I and Miss Terry and I have been going back and forth. We are all absolutely smitten, besotted with the last episode, the musical episode of Star Trek, Strange New Worlds. And Tracy sent me an article today. It may well be the best Star Trek episode ever across all the series.
Now, for which one is this?
This is Season 2, Episode 9 of Star Trek Strange New Worlds.
Oh, that... I do like that series because it goes back to more of the classic old series Star Trek kind of...
Well, it's pre... It's not pre-Kirk, but it's Captain Pike's time. And yeah. Rebecca Romijn as number one. I didn't even realize that was Rebecca Romijn. Oh my goodness gracious. And the production number that Nurse Chapel leads in last week's episode, we've watched it three or four times, just can't quit. It's that good. And by the way, totally off topic, because this is the vacuous portion of the program. I just saw a meme today that slayed me. For those of you who watched and fell in love with Ted Lasso and are probably still grieving, any little something along the way helps. And I saw a meme today that was a side-by-side photograph of Coach Beard from Ted Lasso and, wait for it, Jack Smith. Whoever made it said, please tell me I'm not the only one who sees this every time Jack Smith is on TV. Coach Beard is all I see. And I showed it to I showed it to Annette and I said, he's been moonlighting. And then I said, let's prosecute Trump, baby!
Trump came out criticizing Jack Smith as woke and all this.
Deranged.
Insinuating that he was black. No, insinuating that he was black. Because obviously his supporters who don't watch regular television would never know because they don't talk about it on TV, radio, or whatever. Or Newsmuck or any of those. No. The world is really white to those fuckheads.
Oh, yeah. Oh, by the way, you were mentioning your chili recipe. Don in West Tennessee just wrote in and said, Chili? Too soon here. But I still use your recipe from years ago with the cream of mushroom, etc. Hard to beat. I know, isn't it?
Cream of mushroom.
Yes.
Now, I've heard of putting mushrooms in chili.
No.
But like portobellos and stuff like that.
This is my cheater's, my I want chili right now, spend 30 minutes and be done. It uses, this will probably start something on the same level as the Miracle Whip debate yesterday. So it's my turn. It's so easy. It's a pound of ground beef and a packet of chili seasoning, and you know, you put some water in, let it simmer. After the ground beef is ground, you put the chili seasoning in, let it simmer. Doctor it with whatever spices you like. You know, Todd said he always hammers it with extra cumin. I get that. I put in a can of Rotel and a can of kidney beans. And then the base is a can of cream of mushroom soup, a can of cream of celery soup, a can of cream of onion soup. And the color comes out just perfect. It has a beautiful chili flavor. And you're done in 30 minutes.
That sounds like a wee bit of cheating.
That's why it's called Cheater's Chili.
Okay. But my recipe is real simple. You take your tomato base, your sauce, and you slow cook that. And you take pork or beef, like stew beef, or cubed up pork butt, and you cut about 3 or 4 pounds. Brown that in some spices, but cinnamon's got to be, a little bit of cinnamon's got to be in it.
No, you lost me.
Hold on, I'm going to tell you one thing.
You're too close to Cincinnati.
This ain't Cincinnati chili. If you look at the a bottle of chili spice, you will see cinnamon in it. So I don't want to hear any bullshit from the West Virginia section. My point is, you spice up the meat, you brown it, you put in a little crushed garlic,
cinnamon.
You cut up like 2 pounds of cheddar cheese, and you slowly melt that in. Grating it is best. You put your, if you're into beans in your chili, I prefer going getting the Brooks chili beans.
Oh, and by the way, for our vegetarian friends, I want to let you know that Cheater's chili recipe, you can do it with tofu. I've done it several times.
The tofu will take up the flavor.
It takes up all the flavor. It's really meaty, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
It's yummy.
Well, instead of meat, if you're doing my version as a vegetarian, I recommend portobello mushrooms. Those work out real good because you get the earthy flavor. You get the meaty texture. You can add some tofu as well. My niece is lactose intolerant, so she leaves out the cheese. But then
I always see the cheese as something that goes on after.
Well, you're using it as a thickener, and you deglaze the pan with some red wine, and you put that in the chili, and you let that cook. And you let it cook for about an hour and a half if you're making a 5-quart pot. Let it simmer for about an hour and a half. Let it cool a little and then serve. Or, bag it up, put it in the fridge overnight, and it's much better the next day. But, yeah, instead of meat, if you're a vegetarian, you can use tofu and portobello mushrooms, and that makes a wonderful chili. And you don't have the grease. If the fats are a little more than you're used to, but if you need to add if you miss that sheen, use some regular olive oil, not extra virgin. The reason you use regular olive oil is regular olive oil is used for hot preparation.
Yeah, and it doesn't have the
extra virgin is for cold.
And extra virgin has a much more profound flavor. Don in West Tennessee said, "Dave's making me sweat with all the prep." And Don added it. He said, "I use the crock pot. Just put it in, put all the stuff in, walk away, and chili later."
If you're making a 5-quart batch for freezing, this is the way you do it, because you will have chili for months in that freezer, and with the wine in it, it doesn't freeze. A lot of times, it doesn't freeze all the way. So when you take it a couple months later out of the freezer, it's practically ready to go. Just
heat
it out a little bit.
Heat and eat. By the way, Randy Radar recommends a Thrive Market membership. Organic dry goods delivered to your door, $60 a year membership. That sounds nice.
That sounds nice.
Yeah. Cincinnati Chili, Jimmy in the Great Northwest writes in, "Does Dave mean India chili?" Not sure, Jimmy. I guess this is technically Indiana chili.
Well, I know where the confusion can occur, but, you I've heard some chili cheers go, you know, no beans. You know, and that's okay, but I grew up with my mother trying to stretch every penny out of every dollar.
Sure.
If she could get $1.20 out of the dollar, she was doing okay. And so she would make up this chili. And if she didn't feel like cutting up the meat, by God, there were cans of Hormel ready to go in as the beans. Quick, easy, and she just put them over Fritos and call them Frito pie. And
is there anything more wonderful?
No, no. And my niece was getting kind of frustrated with my sister, her mom, because every time she goes back down to Evansville to school, my sister pretty much cleans out the mother-in-law freezer. Well, honey, you're going to need this. You're going to need it. She said that Kathy sent her like 2 weeks worth of food home with her, and she was getting kind of frustrated. And I looked at her and I said, honey, you got to understand. That's your mother's way of telling you she loves you. Because as kids, we didn't always have enough to eat. You know, so she's by cooking and sending all this stuff home with you, and she's telling you she loves you.
Oh, yeah. Every time, when I was a kid, every time we would come up here, my grandmother would empty the cellar.
Oh, yeah. And you'd have those jams and jellies and whatnot.
The canned quarts of blackberries in syrup.
Now, my mother canned a lot of vegetables, but she didn't can meats unless it was like a meat sauce.
Wait, you've never opened up a quart can of home canned squirrel?
No, ma'am, I have not.
Dave, you haven't lived.
I know. Well, you know, I'm up here in Talladega, Indiana, where our biggest worry is finding out how we're going to keep Kentuckians out of our beloved state.
Oh, hold on. As if Kentuckians would ever want to go to Talladega, Indiana, please. I mean, isn't that driving from the frying pan into the fire?
Well, and no, it's more like a bridge falling into the Ohio River.
Yes, and another reminder, that's West Virginia's river, in case anybody was wondering. Just need to reinforce that.
Happened a few years ago. Well, then I think they should take, West Virginia should take the state of Ohio court and have it declared as territorial waters.
Well, no, it's already established in law. Ohio does not start until the other side of the damn river. And by the way, just for anybody curious, Ohio used to be what became Ohio was Virginia, but you know that.
Well, yeah, so was Indiana.
Right. All the way.
So, you know,
Marin County was part of Virginia at one point. I mean, I've seen the maps. Virginia just goes. It's all Virginia. And most of it was Carroll County, Virginia. So,
yeah. And, I heard one lawyer on C-SPAN, a lawyer from Indianapolis, who was addressing a group of history buffs at Gettysburg or something. He said, I'm one of your fellow Virginians, and he was right, because at one time, this was all Virginia. It wasn't even the Ohio Territory, which was recognized by the British. That Indiana was it was full of illegal settlements back in colonial times.
Sure.
There's a reason Lewis and Clark, at least Clark, jumped off from his home in Indiana, what is now Clark County, Indiana. But, yeah, this is, but anyway, a few years ago, they had a joint commission to take care of these bridges going across the Ohio into Kentucky and into Indiana. Well, both being Republican states and allergic to spending any kind of dollars, they let the maintenance on these bridges go and go and go until one day a whole span of this bridge collapsed into the river.
Yeah.
And you had the Kentucky commissioners pointing at the Indiana commissioners and vice versa and blaming each other.
And nobody had the good common sense to blame Mothman.
Well, that's true.
I'll get a note from Joy on that one. No, you know the collapse of the Silver Bridge from Ohio into West Virginia is the origin of the Mothman myth.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
Absolutely. Well, they had to blame somebody. But being Republicans, they obviously didn't want to take responsibility for this. And I believe the collapse occurred during the Obama administration, and they tried to blame the Obama administration for it. And the federal government took it and said, It was your responsibility. And so, you know, what did your grandmother always say? You kids quit roughhousing. You're the reason we can't have nice things. You know, that sort of thing.
Or, you know, cool hand Luke. Well, I don't want to see anybody playing grab ass. I see anybody playing grab ass into the box.
Well, that'd be worth walking past somebody just to get a vacation in the sauna, yeah. But my friend Jerry was he does a lot of entertainment law in California. And one of his friends his friend George starred in that movie.
George Kennedy?
Uh-huh. Yep. And the sad thing is, Robin, George Kennedy was a World War II veteran, an Academy Award winning actor, had a long and beloved career. Do you know how many people showed up at his funeral in Idaho, where he was living? Six.
Really?
One grandson, my friend Jerry, and two of his kids, and two other people. Only six people showed up to that man's funeral. And he and Jerry had been friends for like 13, 14 years. They were fishing buddies. Jerry's got pictures of them together fishing and whatnot, and carrying on. And when he died, it tore Jerry apart. And I simply tagged him on Facebook and said, Jerry, if you want to talk, call me. And eventually he did. But he loved George Kennedy, and he said that George told him a story about Leslie Nielsen. He and Leslie Nielsen were having a conversation when that slow speed chase in L.A. was going on with O.J.
And you mean the one where they ran out and accidentally arrested John Elway because the all points because the all points bulletin said be on the lookout for a slow moving white Bronco. As long as people remember that case, that will continue to be funny.
That is funny. Are you happy to see me, or is that a quarterback in your pocket? You know. The lovely thing is that they're sitting there. Can you believe this shit? And Jerry heard George Kennedy's side of the conversation, and he's like, Dave, you would not. He swore up and down. He said, that's the thing that, you know, freaked him out. Because, like, in L.A., you're one person away from knowing everybody else.
6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
You know. Right. If you haven't worked with Kevin Bacon,
right? That's how it works.
Start off as him. You'll know somebody who has, and you'll have worked with at least three of them before the end of the year. Yeah, that kind of thing.
I think Dan and I played that game one evening because that was like, thanks to Dan, I was like 4 degrees or something. Maybe I'm remembering wrongly, but yeah.
Well, you know the MAGA Republicans all remind me of Kevin Bacon's character in Animal House.
No,
but you're sort of my other, yeah.
Hit me again and put some stank on it. Yeah, Dave, have yourself a good evening. Hey, how's Christine?
Christine's doing much better.
Good.
Like I said, her therapist died.
Yeah, that's...
And she'd been working with him for 20 years.
It's going to take a little bit to break a new one in.
Well, that, and they assigned a woman to her, and she doesn't work well with other women. And I've noticed it over the years.
That reminds me of when I first signed up for therapy, and they assigned me a therapist. This is early in transition. They assigned me a therapist, not with one, but 2 degrees from Jerry Falwell University. And I rung them back up and I said, y'all, this is not going to work. I'm not going to therapy to defend my right to exist. Or to have my authenticity challenged and erased. I'm trying to get to somewhere.
Now did this woman happen to also have a degree from
a bachelor's and a master's from Jerry Falwell University.
Because
the entire social work, counseling, and psychology departments are nothing but conversion therapy.
Well, I heard an interview from a man, a gay man who graduated from Oral Roberts University, and there was actually an LGBTQ plus group on campus. This was, you know, 20 years ago. And they called themselves ORU Out, which I thought was rather clever. But, yeah, I find it funny that they would send you to somebody like that, and then, you know, what's billable on your insurance? I remember when you were having trouble getting insurance, and Christine offered to go with you on a road trip to give them what for. Anyway, she's doing well, Robin.
Good.
And I'll let her know you asked.
Glad you. I appreciate that, Dave. You have a good evening, my friend.
You too.
All right. Bye. Our buddy Dave in the blind out in Taliban, Indiana. Hey, thank you so much. Big thanks to Lori up in Michigan. Thank you, Lori. Canton, Ohio's challenge is met. So let's see. And that means we go down. We got a little extra, too. Thank you, Lori. So we were at 1165. So we're at 1065. 1030. $1,030 is the fundraising goal now. And if we got it down to, if we could raise $130 in the next 39 minutes, we would be fully funded for last Thursday, and that would be fantastic, because that would get us down to 9. Thank you. Okay, I want to go back to U.S. women's soccer. Darlene in Connecticut said, I'm beginning to agree with Steve from New York that deciding who wins a championship soccer game on a penalty kick is kind of weird. All right, stupid even. He's got a point. But I won't go so far as to say it isn't a sport because of that, though. I played soccer as a kid and found it impossibly difficult. This was well before my disease manifested. You have to be in phenomenal shape to play it at any level of competency, let alone professionally. Truth. And I think if you are not just... If you're not fully conversant with the rules, it's real easy to just think that what you're seeing going on in the field just looks like chaos. But it's so much more than that. It's orchestrated and it's planned, and it's just that, you know, scoring is hard. Arguably, I think you could say that scoring is harder in soccer than it is in football. And definitely harder than it is in baseball. Orders of magnitude harder than it is in basketball. But the question, Darlene, is what do you do? What's the remedy? Let them play till they drop? Or start peeling away players until you're down to one-on-one? Hell, maybe that would work. I don't know. Or maybe like college football, where you play from the, not exactly like college football, but, you know, where you play, where each side gets an opportunity to play inside the opponent's defensive zone. Don't know. I'm not well versed enough, and unlike those right wing asshats, I'm not going to sit here and talk about U.S. women's national team being beaten in the 16th round. Benny Johnson, what a jackass. Oh, that's funny. Scary Jerry sent me a meme. This got some pissed in MAGA land. It's also a meme I'm helping spread. It's a picture of Biden, two pictures of Biden, one where he's holding up his Dark Brandon mug, and the next one where he's drinking from it. This is Joe Biden's only known mugshot. I like my coffee dark. Oh, I bet that does have him screaming. Meanwhile, the Brain Trust, the Maggot Brain Trust, oh my heavenly days, and clearing things up, it was Monkey Up Duplantis that Dave said, is 42. And that led to some paroxysms of what the, from Arnold in PA, who said, is that motherfucker really only 42? I'm older than that governor prick, and you would make a better Florida governor too, Arnold. So I mentioned the brain trust. This just has Titanic Tuesday written all over it. The man with the largest forehead on Earth and nothing in his actual brain pan, Representative Matt, it just gates worse. Man who pays off underage girls on Venmo and leaves it public. Well, today, Matt, it just gates worse, decided to sit down, he with his giant forehead, to have a conversation with the guy with the giantest head on Earth. When you think about head, think about big giant head, Charlie Kirk. The maggot brain trust in there in the House of Representatives is feverishly trying to figure out a way to save their orange-stained God Emperor from the legal peril that he keeps trying to make sure he stays in. And so, sitting down and talking to Matt Gaetz, or Matt Gaetz talking to Charlie Kirk, suddenly a potential solution appeared. Because Matt and the Brain Trust have been cogitating over this. They've been doing their ciphering and their gazettas. And they know what they're going to do. They're thinking about giving Nitwit Nero congressional immunity. Take that, Jack Smith! Meanwhile, Jack Smith is sitting somewhere with a cold glass of sparkling cider or seltzer and cackling quietly to himself. Oh yeah, Matt, do that. Try that, buddy. Please. You're obstructing a federal investigation. And I don't think this is going to qualify under the speech and debate clause. You're just on a talk radio program, dipshit.
Here's what we ought to do, and we shouldn't make it that complicated. First, we should tell Jack Smith that he has to show up and give a transcribed interview to the House Judiciary Committee in the next 15 days. If he doesn't do that, we should issue a subpoena. If he ignores the subpoena, we should hold him in criminal contempt of Congress and force him to be the first prosecutor to bring a case while under criminal contempt himself. And if Merrick Garland won't enforce that criminal contempt.
This is delightful because he's grinning like a four-year-old who just pottied by himself without, you know, getting any in his pants.
Then he subjects himself to an impeachment of the House. So it would be an attorney general under impeachment, a prosecutor under contempt. And I think that frames what's going on better than just sitting back and hoping we hear no evil, see no evil, and speak no evil as this plays out. Because if we grant the premise, Charlie, that this is an ongoing legitimate matter, then it just builds into it the notion that it is law enforcement activity and not election interference. Congress has equities at play with election interference. We ought to do that. Simultaneous to that, you can actually bring President Trump in to give testimony to the Congress, and in doing so, immunize him. Now, there's different forms of immunity that take place at the committee level, subcommittee level. In some instances, for full immunity, you have to have more of a supermajority vote. But if you had a supermajority vote of a committee, like Speaker McCarthy could set up a select committee tomorrow that could bring
Trump really,
in
really could.
And immunize him. And then we could proceed with the very legitimate
That's what the Ouija board told
work
us.
That we're doing of the Bidens and the corrupt DOJ. So, unfortunately, none of those things are happening. Instead, Congress is not in Washington, not assembled. And I think the timing is on purpose. No timing in D.C. is ever just, you know, a mere coincidence. And so right as Congress is leaving town, right as
this silly prick is playing records backwards in his head, isn't he? Turn me on, dead man. Turn me on, dead man. Impeach Jack Smith. Impeach Jack Smith.
as we're walking away from our equities, you see this acceleration of activity against Trump.
So yeah, let's be specific here, though. So immunize him from what crimes, even if he's under current indictment? Is that including even the obstruction claims? And give us some examples of how this has been used recently.
Well, it hasn't been used recently, but obviously we're aware of the ability for any person to plead the Fifth. You can dissolve someone's ability to plead the Fifth if you immunize them. And so Congress has this ability that's been recognized. It's even laid out in 18 USC 6002 and 6005, if folks want to look it up. But you've got the ability to say, well, we're hereby compelling your testimony. We're giving you immunity for anything you say to us and anything that that would lead to. And so, for example, if President Trump came in and said, I'm here to give you testimony about the witch hunt, the abuse of criminal process that Congress has legitimate oversight equities.
Only one problem here.
And if he were to say things to us, we could immunize him for that conduct that he were to discuss.
Does it take a vote, or does it happen?
But these aren't usual times.
Is it a committee vote? Is it the whole House that has to vote on immunization? And when was the last time this statute was used?
I don't know when the last time it was used. I can say it can be any committee or subcommittee that can grant immunity. So we could even bring him into the subcommittee chaired by my good friend and colleague Andy Biggs, the crime subcommittee. That has jurisdiction over some of these activities of the Department of Justice. And if Trump were to essentially become a whistleblower, you have to think about it almost like whistleblower protections. Trump, the ultimate whistleblower, potentially the beneficiary of congressional immunity on some of the information.
Wait, hold on. I just want to make sure I understand this. So that Donald Trump could be called in, let's say, by the Andy Biggs Committee or whatever, or the Weaponization of Government Committee.
So hold on. Pass the fucking bong there, Matt. You're way ahead of me. And speaking of other Matts, Matt in San Francisco, Gates, I think I just lost 2 IQ points listening to him. I should probably issue a trigger and content warning, Matt. It's true. Imagine what I go through. It's a freaking miracle I can tie my shoelaces. Why I wear sandals.
Which obviously he's a subject matter expert. And as long as he is giving whistleblower testimony on each one of the charges against him, that would effectively neuter the Department of Justice from being able to continue to pursue charges against him. Am I understanding this?
Yeah, no, it's not how it works, dipshit. Anything he says can and will be used against him in a court of law. Yes, Lee, as a matter of fact, Lee in New York says, Congress giving indicted idiot immunity. Is that called a cootie shot? That is the congressional cootie shot, Lee.
Yeah, see, we asked him questions under oath, and he's immunized now, and Jack Smith can't prosecute him. See how smart we are?
Is correctly?
It's a little more nuanced than that, Charlie. You're immunized for the statements you make and the conduct that uncovers. You know, if we're talking in hypotheticals, if President Trump had committed a murder somewhere, I don't know that giving testimony about the weaponization of the federal government would immunize that type of conduct.
Oh, good. Let's indict him for his misfeasance and malfeasance in office over COVID. Mount up.
But I think particularly where you've got Jack Smith trying to fashion the actions the president took while in office to try to evaluate and investigate information that was coming across his desk, you could certainly immunize him for that. So I think that the areas where we could provide the broadest immunity for President Trump would be around the conspiracy charges, the deprivation of rights charges. It's almost hard to say with a straight face that Jack
Smith telling me.
In fact, it was the FBI doing the most to deprive people of their rights when they had agents meeting with Facebook, Meta, Twitter, all these technology companies to try to get the Hunter Biden laptop story just scrubbed from the entire information domain during the 2020 presidential.
Because, you know, it was bullshit.
Contest. So that would be a specific area where I think we could neuter the deprivation of rights and conspiracy charges.
Yeah, hold on a minute. I think somebody's got some castration kinks, okay? That's his second or third use of neutering. Are you thinking, Matt, honey, are you thinking about Jack Smith's giant testicles a lot lately? Are you? Really?
Whistleblower testimony.
And so potentially Donald Trump could come in as a whistleblower and blow the whistle on what was happening up in the events of leading up to January 6th. Nancy Pelosi didn't want to give troops, you know. Because a lot of the indictment is centered around the events that lead up to that. And so, I see no downside here. So you're going to have to walk me through this, Matt. What you're saying is interesting. I don't know if it'll stand up in court, but it's certainly worth a try. And this is exactly the type of thing we need. As the Department of Justice is used as a Democrat super PAC, why wouldn't we try to offer Donald Trump immunity and force the hand of the Department of Justice, especially on the conspiracy charges and the January 6th related stuff?
Do you think Jack Smith's team actually wastes any time watching this? Because, I mean, this is funny. This is some high comedy. This is good stuff. If the writers were not on strike in Hollywood, and one of them came up with a treatment and walked it into the studio, shut up! Get out of here! That wouldn't even pass muster on night court.
Stuff. Is there any downside here? I don't quite see a negative.
Well, in theory, the downside of bringing anyone before Congress to give testimony is that if you say something that is material and that is not accurate, that can create a cascade of follow-on charges.
Yeah. Now take a minute, because I think we're kind of getting lost in the Gatesian weeds here. Remember, this is Nitwit Nero we're talking about, y'all. Imagine him trying to sit down in front of even a friendly congressional committee. Even a fawning, obsequious congressional committee. Imagine him sitting down there and trying to stick to the script. Now, Judge Chutkan cut short Nitwit Nero's argument, saying, you know, all my lawyers are terribly busy. They're very, very busy. And we need to have our little hearing next Monday. And Judge Chutkan said, no, I said we're going to have it this week. And your lawyer didn't say he was busy on Friday, so Friday at 10 a.m. it is. They're not very good at this, are they? Because she's not going to put up with a bunch of shit. But then, at the request of Nitwit Nero's pettifoggers, Judge Chutkan did say, well, it's okay. He doesn't have to show up. This is just motion practice. He doesn't have to be here. Which kind of bothered me, because this is all about shitbird running around out there, obstructing justice, intimidating witnesses, and threatening people. And here's the thing, Matt Gaetz can't keep Democrats off the committee, so that means that they would get to cross-examine Nitwit Nero. And I think one of the things they would have to do is make sure that this went to, I don't know, the Committee on Agriculture or something, anywhere that Dan Goldman isn't. Because if you let somebody like Dan Goldman cross-examine Nitwit Nero in a committee hearing, he's going to get petulant. Nitwit Nero, not Goldman. He's going to get pissy. He's going to get defensive. He's going to say, excuse me, excuse me, excuse me, a lot. And he will probably admit to more crimes than he's even charged with under those circumstances, which is kind of what Matt Gaetz is getting at here. This is, well, I mean, it's Charlie Kirk and it's Matt Gaetz. This is some limp dick attempt at masturbation.
So it's never something that you typically think of as a first step to try to bring people into Congress to give testimony, because it's not typically something people enjoy a great deal. But in this case, I think we misunderstand the fight that we are in. Right now, you have the Department of Justice functioning as the enforcement wing of the Democratic Party. And in a lot of ways, what you're...
Yeah, keep saying that, mate, but here's the problem. Oh, did I go Australian all of a sudden? Mate? What? And here's the problem. The reason Matt just Gaetz Worse is doing this is because Matt Gaetz knows, just like Marginal Trailer Queen knows, just like Andy Biggs knows, just like Paul Gosar, the demon dentist of the desert, knows that Jack Smith is far from done. And the members of Congress who colluded and conspired and who did so outside the realm of the speech and debate clause may find themselves hiring their own counsel. Or maybe they've already had a sit-down. Maybe they're not like Nitwit Nero, and they can actually get one of those silk-stocking lawyers who deals with allegations of felonious crime on a federal level by employees of the federal government, or members thereof. And to think, says Darlene in Connecticut, Representative Tim Burchett, repig of Tennessee, who sits on the House National Security Subcommittee, said, Matt, it just Gaetz better, has a phenomenal legal mind. Maybe he meant Matt Gaetz as a UAP, an unidentified asshole phenomenon. Well, I was going to say something similar until I got to your closing line there, Darlene. Phenomenon and phenomenal are not necessarily positive statements. I agree he's phenomenal too. He is a phenomenal idiot. He's also a phenomenal pervert. He may be a phenomenal supporter of insurrection. Now, with all of this going as prologue, our buddy Irish Dave says, a little worrisome, the Watergate immunized, Ron-Contra committee immunized Ollie North for his testimony as a method of denying himself incrimination protection. Sadly, that was the basis of the overturning of his conviction, complex decision that I don't recall the details of in this case. I remember... And Dave dug around a little bit more. On July 20th, 1990, with the help of the American Civil Liberties Union, North's convictions were vacated after the appeals court found that witnesses in his trial might have been impermissibly affected by his immunized congressional testimony. Might have been. That's what made it a terrible decision. Might have been. No actual proof that they were. Might have been. Courts make horrible mistakes all the time. Oh, Emilio. Emilio says, Lindsey Graham's still waiting for his whistleblower. Poor little fella. John in Central PA. I read your email. Just don't. Serves no purpose. It would be a vent. And then you would probably get a visit from people you don't want to be visited by. Okay? John wants to write a shitty letter to Alien Cannon telling her that she's a moron and a disgrace to the profession. I mean, I agree. I agree to all of that. I agree with all of that. But venting it on an email or a note, where's the upside, John? Where's the upside? A Emilio noting, Gates.
If Jack Smith doesn't answer the subpoena, we can write a bad review of him on Yelp. If that doesn't get him, we can put dog poop in a paper bag and light it on fire and put it in front of his office door. If he doesn't step on the poop, we can flip a bucket of pig's blood on his head and give him a wedgie.
I don't think they've got that kind of courage, Emilio. You see, you get the tenor of this. Nutty. Just nutty. And they're scared. That's the whole thing. That's the important part of this. They are flippin' terrified. Because they know, like I said, they know Smith is still investigating, and they don't know what necessarily he's investigating. So that's why he'd like to drag Jack Smith in front of the committee. Yeah, tell us all about your case. No. Don't got to. Ongoing investigation. Shut the fuck up. Talk to you later. Bye. And now, a little something-something from Tim Parlatore. Tory. Tim Parlatore, at one point, was a lawyer for Nitwit Nero. And, now he represents Bernie Kerik, who seems like he's in the lead now, be co-conspirator number 6. And he sat down, I don't know why, to talk about what Jack Smith's team grilled Bernie Kerik about. And Tim Parlatore, who really shouldn't be talking about things going on in a grand jury, said it's a laser focus from Election Day to January 6th. And so people are speculating again. That Jack Smith is delving into whether Nitwit Nero himself or his nasty little pack took a pee on federal law and raised money on an allegation they knew, not or should have known, but outright knew to be false. The House Select Committee made that specific finding. According to Parlatore, Smith's team wasn't interested in Mark Meadows or Jenna Ellis, but they did ask about Boris Epstein, also in the running for co-conspirator number 6, and Deputy 2020 Campaign Manager Justin Clark. And apparently Clark and Giuliani got into it over Nitwit Nero barking and grunting and hooting and bleating about the Georgia results. This is all terribly fascinating. And it's fun to see some of the stupid stuff. It feels like we're watching Nitwit Nero sort of self-sabotage. Oh, and going back to the Shakespeare story. In the Tampa Bay Times, one of their reporters reached out to teacher Joseph Cool. And Joseph Cool said, well, there's some raunchiness in Shakespeare, because that's what sold tickets during his time. Just during his time, Mr. Cool? How much fun would teenagers in high school have? He's Mr. Cool. He's not just Mr. Cool, he's Joe Cool. You know, of Snoopy fame. Joe Cool. No singing. and in an attempt to explain it all away, Hillsborough County School spokescreep Tanya Arya, or maybe Arha, I don't know, said, "We need to make sure our students are prepared with enough material during the year so they will be prepared for their assessments." So we don't really ask students to read whole books anymore. Then a member of the Hillsborough County School Board named Jessica Vaughn said, "We only just found out about this right before school started. Honestly, it feels like much of this is intentional in order to cause as much chaos in public education as possible. Congratulations, you get a cowbell, Jessica." So that the collapse of public education is swift and the agenda of education privatization can move forward with less obstacles. And Joe Cool did say, "I think the rest of the nation, no, the world, is laughing at us. Taking Shakespeare in its entirety out because the relationship between Romeo and Juliet is somehow exploiting minors is just absurd." Because they're claiming that, child sex trafficking, groomers! You know, Harvard has a lot to answer for granting a degree to Ron Monkey up DeKlantis. They just do. And one last funny thing, because it's Titanic Tuesday. We haven't talked about Pink Shrek in a while, Joe Rogaine. Writing at the Arizona Republic, E.J. Montini talked a little bit about Joe Rogaine and his propensity for just asking questions. And that's all well and good if the questions are at least remotely in good faith or marginally intelligent, but all the just-asking questions that Joe Rogaine does are conspiracy theories or abject stupidity. And so E.J. Montini savaged him because, again, under
just asking questions,
you know, jacking off, J-A-Q.
"All that Kerry Lake stuff in Arizona they tried to dismiss, it doesn't look like that's invalid. It looks like there's real fraud there. It looks like there's some real shenanigans there. At the very least, there were voting machines that weren't working properly, and it seems very suspicious that a lot of them were in Republican areas. There's a lot of shenanigans," Pink Shrek went on, "and I think there's coordinated efforts to make sure that certain people get elected. I don't know how far they go, but I know it's not zero."
Well, the aforementioned writer for the Arizona Republic, E.J. Montini, said, Joe Rogan has a history of stuff like this. Actually, you could make the argument that spreading misinformation, conspiracy theories, and all manner of weird and malignant fictions is what grew his daily audience to more than 11 million podcast listeners and landed Rogan a $200 million deal from Spotify. Absolutely true. It's absolutely true. That shit pays. Crazy is a good dollar. But Montini went on and said, "It would have been so easy to tell the truth about Kerry Lake's BS assertions about the election in Arizona. I mean, it wouldn't take more than a couple of clicks. And you find out she's been losing court challenges left and right. Actually, Joe, that Kerry Lake stuff is being dismissed in court because it is invalid. She's down to her last desperate shot at the Arizona Supreme Court, and when that doesn't go her way, she'll shift from grifting to get money for her legal battle to grifting for what probably will be her U.S. Senate campaign." And then said, and this had to sting, "Are you telling me a guy with $200 million can't afford to pay a fact checker? Conspiracy stories sell." Yeah, Mr. Montini, they do. We know that now, thanks to Donald Trump, but Rogan already has his $200 million deal. He could have figured out a way to make exposing a grifter be just as entertaining as enabling one. Meanwhile, there's a scum from Kerry Lake saying, people are ditching the fake news in exchange for truth tellers like Joe Rogaine. Oh, bitch, go brush your hair. Thank you, man. So that's the program. Let's see. Thanks to everybody who jumped in on Cat in Ohio's challenge. Fingers crossed. Polls are closed in Ohio now. I'm holding out hope for democracy in the Buckeye State. Let's see. We got down to 10:30, so that means we're at 13:30 tomorrow. We'll just keep plugging along and hope we can pay the damn bills. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Vicky, that was a big jump in there from Michigan. Thank you. Thanks to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Roger. In the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, please, whatever podcast subscription you have or whatever podcast platform you take this from, please press the subscribe button. Press the like button, the love button, whatever button they got. Leave a comment on the algorithms. Tell your friends and neighbors about this program. I love hearing from people who are brand new to the community and having the opportunity to welcome them to this extraordinarily good conversation. Phenomenally good. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Please stay safe. Get your booster if you're eligible. I'm trying to hold out till like September, October myself. Wear your mask when you're around the maggots, because they don't give a damn about anybody but themselves, and very little for themselves, even. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Carry some with you, pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance to the best of your ability. And, if a guy with a giant forehead and nothing in between his ears comes babbling down the sidewalk about, we're going to give Trump immunity, well, avoid Matt Gaetz like the plague, because he is. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Later.